This Torah class is brought to you by TorahAnytime.com.
Okay, Baruch Hashem, we have survived another week. Not take anything for granted. So, of course, you know the story of the person that came to the doctor and said a very strange phenomenon. Every time he drinks a tea, his left eye hurts. I don't understand. At first, he sent him to an eye doctor. Couldn't figure it out. And it was true. He didn't believe him. Then he went and he drank a tea and he came out and looked and he saw his eye was red. And then he sent him to a ENT and he sent him to a dentist and he sent him to a ear, face and neck guy and he sent him to a neurosurgeon, psychiatrist, psychologist, podiatrist, tried everything. No one can get to the bottom of it why every time he drank a tea his left eye hurt. Then he went to a Rav. He said, Rav, I don't think you can help me. Because I've already seen every medical professional under the book. Natural medicine, unnatural medicine. Chinese voodoo doctors. No one can figure out this. Why? Why every time I drink a tea, my left eye hurts. And the Rav says, I'll give you a pashtate. And he said, what is it? He said, next time you drink a tea, yes, take out the spoon. Ooh, never thought of that. Okay. What really makes a person happy or unhappy? Let me tell you what I heard to my good friend of Simcha Hart. He said, you know, you hear these stories that you have somebody is in the woods. They go on these like adventures together, survival things, 20, 30 people. And they're stuck together for a long period of time. Right? You hear 20 people in the woods, 30 people in the woods. And They're in pain. They have to fight off alligators and lions and tigers and who knows what. And then suddenly, they make it out. Or those that do make it out. Or those that survive. And they're friends forever. People that are in the, you know, the stories of people that were on a hijacked plane or whatever. And they're friends forever. Why? How come you put 10 people in a shul and they daven shachas mincha ma'ariv together for who knows how long and they're not friends forever? What changes? So he says that these people stuck in the woods, these 20 people, there's nobody else. If they don't kick in for each other, then nobody else can. No one else can. You can't say, well, that's it, I'm leaving this group, I'm going off to a different group. It doesn't work. You know, I'm leaving the shul, I'm starting a new shul. Can't do it. There's no place else to go. You have two choices. Get along or remain in these woods forever, gone. Those are the two choices that you have. So all of a sudden, guess what? You become friends for life. And if we had a proper amunah of a yichan sham, right? A yichan sham el har, that they were ki'ish echad b'leiv echad. So what happened by Har Sinai? That essentially what happened by Har Sinai is, that everyone understood that. Guess what? The people you're davening with in your minyan, they're the people that you need. They're the people. Varaya, they're the ones that HaKadosh Baruch Hu put you with. Like that story we have said at least umpteen times, but it's good. It's good. You got to hear it once in a while. At least once every 30 days, I think. We do better than that. We do once every 60 days. But anyway, this person is traveling to the Baal Shem Tov, and he comes Friday. Is Erev Yom Kippur, and a bunch of people come out. They say, we're so happy you're passing through our town because we emptied out the barn, and we'd love for you to daven with us. And he goes, really, I've been traveling 6 months away from my friends to get to the Baal Shem Tov. I'm really, like, not here. Please, I beg of you. And they said, but we need you. You're the 10th to the minion. You're the 10th. Notice, you call somebody in, and as last night by Marv passing by, I said, Madafa Tzenta. I went in, there were five people there. I said, I took Medaf a tzenta. He says, we do need a tzenta. We need four more people and a tzenta. We need five tzentas. You know? So the guy said, sorry guys, but I didn't come here to a barn, all right, to daven with you. And he went to his Rebbe, and he came to the Baal Shem Tov. The Baal Shem Tov did not even look at him, the entire Yom Kippur. And he's trying to figure out what he did wrong. maybe when he toveled himself, the tefillos, the shy tefillos, the 310 immersions in the mikvah, you have to be kabbalah. Maybe he only got 309. Maybe he was mahapach, the midas achesed for gvur. He was supposed to think about tefarish shabanetzach instead of he was thinking about chacham bin adas. And then finally he said to the Baal Shem Tov, what is it? What did I do wrong? You're not talking to me. So the Baal Shem Tov said, why aren't you davening with those people? You were the 10th man. Baal Shem Tov says, there's a kabbalah from the Baal Shem Tov, when you have 9 people, you're going to have a 10th. They had 9 people and they had a 10th, but the 10th left. You could be the 10th, but who says you're there to stay? So he said, I came to the Rebbe, not to daven with them in a barn. That's not why I left my family for who knows how long. So the Baal Shem Tov told him, but your mission on this world, your tafkin on this world, the reason that you're here, the only reason that you're here on this world was to daven with them, Yom Kippur. So he said, may I be so bold as to ask you a question, Rebbe? You're a Rebbe. You know that. How was I supposed to know that? So Hashem says, why do you have to have Ruach HaKodesh? Well, you were there. You were there. You should have known it. So Klal Yisrael was together. There was no question about it. By Har Sinai, everyone stood exactly where they were supposed to be. And you saw all future generations. And from that point on, the way it works is, guess what? If we're sitting here by a shir together, we are meant to be together. Sorry, guys. If you're davening in a minyan, then you're meant to be together. The guy said, I get along with the entire world. You see that I'm really a good person. How many? What's the world population? Moshe, what's the world population? Billions. Can you be more specific than billions? One person at a time, I know. Anybody, what is the world population? You have any idea what the world population is, huh? Rafal? What? How many customers do you have for your electric business?
I don't know.
At least 1 out of 10 people in the world use you, no? We can chasm it that way.
No.
I think it's about 6 billion. Oh, don't go country by country. Let's say about 6 billion. 7 billion people. So this guy timed it like this. There's 7 billion people in the world. I have no fights with anyone except for my wife, my father, my mother, my son, my daughter, my mother-in-law. And my 7.6 billion. So out of the 7.6 billion people, there's only like these 6-7 people I don't get along with. Right? My wife, my children, my employer, my employee, the guy that sits next to me in shul. Those are the only ones I don't get along with. Everyone else, so you see that those people are crazy, right? If I have nothing with 7.6 billion people minus 5, these 5 are crazy. Hello? These are the 5 that you have to live with. These are the 5 that are part of your life. These are the 5 that you have to just fill into place. Okay, so as you noticed, I have a different kind of path today. Right? No one even commented on it. So sad. That's because you're busy looking up how many people there are in the world. That's why. What were you looking up before I asked you to look up how many people are in the world? Anyway, I know, you want to know when the Moilid was for Chodesh Adar, right? I don't know if you noticed, Evi Chamishasa B'Shvat, I changed paths. You notice that? Mordechai, you notice that? Didn't, huh? You should remember from the last Chamishasa B'Shvat. And there's a reason for it. What was that, Moshe? Should I give you the microphone? Okay. I could take it. It's all right. Oh, I should look it up. Oh, you got to look it up. Oh, okay. Now, you know that usually I use this book, right? And now I'm using this. So I don't take a career change easily. I do it after a lot of thinking. But I figure that the inyan over here with Chemishasa B'Shvat is, the whole inyan of Chemishasa B'Shvat is you have to be able to turn the page. So here you also turn. You got to turn the page in such a way that the problem with this pad is you don't know where you wrote your notes. This way or the other way. One way or another. You got to turn the page. You got to say, that's it. You got to weiter. I think this is the last, oh my goodness, this is for last Chemishasa B'Shvat. Yeah. This is when President Trump was just elected. Oh boy. Oh no, President Obama. It's like really old notes over here, you know what I mean? Should America get out of Vietnam? Wow, this is really goes back a lot. Hope this is the right pad. Oh, here we go. Okay. So what I was saying is that I like about this pad is you just turn the page and you're going to invite her. So l'kavod Chemishasa B'Shvat, I figured there should be a change, right? Turn the leaf.
So really, what is Chamisha Asa B'Shvat? And some you may argue, technically, that it's already after Chamisha Asa B'Shvat, although some Rebbes are still fearing Tish. The B'nai Yisrael says the Indian of Chamisha Asa B'Shvat is a Bar Miyoyim Kodim Yitzirus of Lad, 40 days before the creation of a child. Machriz Nekol HaNashamayim, Bas Ployni L'Ployni, that the daughter of so-and-so should marry so-and-so. Now notice it says a Bar Miyoyim Kodim Yitzirus of Lad. So when this Baskel rings out, that so-and-so should marry so-and-so, nobody knows what that Baskel is talking about. Because it's 40 days before the creation of the child. So no one knows, I can't Bas Ployni L'Ployni, who's the Ployni? I don't know who it is. And in our lives also, the Rebbeinu Shem is setting the pace for us, but we have no inkling of what's coming. Because even if a cruise comes out in a Shemayim, it's the Rebbeinu Shem sets what has to take place and then creates us to fill the role. So if you understand the level of Hashgacha Pratis, it's not that, oh, in my life, you know, every once in a while I see Hashgacha Pratis, I lost something, and then I said the tefillah, and I pinked out to go. No. It's the Rebbeinu Shem's world. It's not that it's your life and you see Hashgacha Pratis in the world. It's the Rebbeinu Shem created the world. You're the Hashgacha Pratis. You're the Metzias of Hashgacha Pratis. You're the person that was there. You're the one. So just like Chamisha Asa B'Shvat is like the sap that goes into the tree, and that's how the tree blossoms, you look outside now, they're talking about snow. You don't see any tree. So the B'nai Sascha says that, according to the Man De'Amar, that B'Nisa Nivra Oilam, which is the sheet of Rabbi Shua, so then Chamisha Asa B'Shvat is a Bo'am Yom Kadim Metzias Avlad. So that means that Hashem is now decreeing what's going to take place next year. What is going to take place in the coming year? In Bria Sa'ilam. Now you're going to say, wait a second, Tishrei, right? No. Machloikis, Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Yeshua. Rabbi Yeshua holds B'Nisa Nivra Oilam, and Rabbi Eliezer holds B'Tishrei Nivra Oilam. So the Rizal says there's no Mach, it's Eli B'Ela Divra L'Kim Chaim. One is B'Machshava, and one is B'Maisa. So the Machshava, whatever that means, the Machshava to create the world was Nisa. So in other words, we're the path of our lives was created before our lives. So bring the Svadish's form, bring the Kabbalim, bring that the Chamisha Asa B'Shvat is a skula for being with Sak and Chet Eitz Hadas. Let's try to explain this a little bit. Eitz Hadas, where does that come in over here? The Divrei Chaim asked the Kasha. On Pesach, we're judged for our tour. On Shavuos, we're judged for anyone? Peiros. The Peiros of the year decided on Shavuos. So wait a second. Chamisha Asa B'Shvat is Rosh Hashanah for the trees, right? Shavuos, we said, Rafal is what? It's for the peiros. So on Shavuos, we hang up trees. Chamisha Asa B'Shvat, we eat peiros. Should it be the other way around? So the answer is, says the Divrei Chaim, because if you want good peiros, you have to have good trees. You want to, now, it's more than that. When it comes to chinuch of children, you put your kaiches in and you don't necessarily see the results right away. You may never, you don't know the results could pop up 2 generations later, 3 generations later. You don't see the results. So there's a story of this Masur who was really bad. He was a Masur, Sheba Masur, Sheba Masur. He sent everyone into the dungeon. He was head of organized crime. If you didn't pay him protection money, you were not protected. You were doomed. Before his father died, he came walking in, and warned his father, "No Musar Shmuzin, okay? I'm out of here." He said, "I want you to promise me one thing. So this better be an easy thing." He says, "I want you to daven mincha. That's it. That's all I got to do. I can smoke on Shabbos. I'm not telling you to smoke on Shabbos. Just you do what you have to do. Mincha, just daven mincha. That's it. Yom Kippur, right? I don't have to worry about worms in my salad. I can do whatever I want. Yeah." Really? I could steal, rob, kill, do all the things I'm doing? No, I'm not telling you to do it. I'm telling you what I want you to promise you is that you daven mincha. So he figured, okay, that'll help his conscience. And for years and years, he davens mincha. And once he was like schlepping this family into a dungeon because they didn't have enough money to pay the pirates, the protection money. And they're these big, hungry, ferocious dogs about to devour them. And as he's pulling them down, you know, and the pirates is laughing because he gets a commission on every prisoner and every drop of blood, he goes, oops, almost shkia. I don't know if he was Macbeth on Rebbeinu Tam or whatever. But he stops on the ladder and he says, "And I can't daven on a ladder." He gets up, he starts davening mincha. And he's saying the words, "Slach lonu." And he's saying, am I crazy? I'm doing this 15 years, 20 years already. Am I nuts? Here I'm davening mincha with the shouts of that family going into the dungeon. Am I crazy? To make a long story short, in the Pirchei series, this will take 6 weeks from point A to point B. But the point is, eventually he says, he lets them free, and the Paras is really angry at him, threatens to kill him and tortures him and so on. So wait a sec. It took 15 years, and when his father told him to daven mincha, it took 15 years of him going through the motions of mincha until the mincha came at the worst possible time, in the most ironic of situations. In an absurd, he's davening mincha as he's literally dragging a mother and a father into a ditch to die, to starve to death. And suddenly at that point, he sees the contradiction and he's ready to risk his life. And that's really why chinuch is compared to the tree. You plant on a tree, you work on a tree, and you have no idea how long it's going to take until you see pears. It takes a very, very long time. And that's what the Divrei Chaim says. Don't compare it to. He says, you keep working on the tree. Don't expect to see the peiros. And that's why Shavuos, during the time of peiros, just put the tree. So a person comes Shavuos and he goes, oh, Rabbi Nishalayla, what's going to be? My kids have no cheshik. They're not ungevaren for Kabbalah Satayra, for Nishmas. You just keep planting the tree. Don't hang peiros. Hand the tree. You do what you have to do, and what happens afterwards, happens afterwards. That's all. We don't understand the intention bracha in life. So there was a story by Hurricane Sandy. A bunch of trees were wiped off a block, and they started to rebuild, and the neighbors got together to replant the trees. And one person tainted that he used to spend a lot of money and a lot of time. He went out every single day, and he poured water to get the trees going. So therefore, now that they're replanting the trees, he wanted that he should get a bigger share, because he put in more work. He felt he lost more. So they went to a din Torah, and they looked into it. And after they looked into it, they said, Adirabba, just the opposite. Hilly, do you ever hear this?
What?
Well, I'll give you a thing. Being that you just walked in, I'll catch you up a little. Where did we start? I have this pad. No, I'm not going back to me. They told him that if you don't water a tree so much, what happens is the roots start spreading, because they're looking for moisture. So the tree is much more solid. Because every day you went out and you watered your tree, it actually had much shorter roots. And as a result, when the hurricane came, it was first to go.
Is that good or bad?
In terms of the entire, he argued that because he was watering the trees, he should get a better share because he put more kaychas into it. But the point is, in terms of chinuch, is that a lot of times our chinuch doesn't seem to be resonating. We're working on our children, and it's not happening. We're not getting them to... They're not turning around in the way we would like them to turn around. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. Because if it's too geschmack, it's too instant. Dava geschmack, yeah! Learn, right, you know. If he's just a robot, it's not real. But if the kid resists, so you're implanting in his inner conscience. Because you do it in the emus, you do it in a nice way. You don't fight with the kid. But don't think you're not being successful. Because the water that's not reaching him means that the roots are going more and more. I was sitting with somebody in the office today. He was going through a major crisis. You can't imagine. And all of a sudden, he got a telephone call that the major crisis became three times as worse. And there's somebody keeps calling on his phone. Someone keeps calling on his phone. Finally, he's like, picks up the phone, so angry, screaming at the guy. What? It's always a problem when you don't know. He doesn't know what's going on the other end of the line, right? And I understand from the conversation, it says, what? That's what you're calling me about? It's this 14-year-old kid. He's calling from yeshiva. Doesn't have what to make a Shechianu on. And by the time he gets home, it's going to be his son, it's going to say, he's going to miss Chabishas and Hashem and Shechianu. And I can hear he's about to scream. You know what I'm going through right now? What do you think? And I grab him and I said, before you scream at him, thank Hashem that that's what your kid is worried about. Because I know a lot of 15-year-olds that the least of their problems is what they're going to make a Shechianu on. That's like the least of their problems. Think about that for a moment. So there was a story in Ben Gurion Airport that a UN plane, you heard about this, Maishi?
Yes,
was flying in the wrong direction for some reason.
FedEx.
Right. FedEx. And a big FedEx plane was coming in. The two almost crashed. Like a 5-second difference. They were coming at each other like 700 miles an hour. And he made this wild turn that could have ripped the wings off the plane, but it saved the lives, and who knows what could have happened. It's good to read these stories before you schedule to fly someplace. It's very geschmack. I remember before I flew, someone sent me this article. A small plane made an emergency landing on a beach Monday, flipped over, ending with one wing at the edge of the surf. Its wheels in the air and tail in the sand, the Associated Press reported. The pilot and the two teenage flight students were not injured. I said, why are you giving me this right before I'm flying? He goes, I want you to take things into consideration. I said, we're not flying over surf, so it's not a problem. It's only for that. So I'm just thinking like this. Now, imagine this big plane, right? This big plane takes this wild, crazy turn, which you're not even allowed to turn that way because the pressure, the sheer pressure, could rip the wings off. We have a helicopter pilot. So I don't know if I'm saying things right. The G's? What's G's?
It's how much gravity, how much force is on the cowling connecting the wing.
That's what I said. How much force is on the cowling connecting the wing to the what? Whatever. The point is, you're not supposed to make this big turn in one shot, right?
Yeah.
Okay. But he had no choice. He had to do it. And he saved, and it was a good decision. He saved the lives. There was another pilot coming in. We actually have two pilots here that are arguing about the wings and the cowlings. Who? Right. Swallow first, then talk. I wonder if that's not what happened. He was eating spaghetti as he was flying. What? What happened?
I was on a plane and I was watching air crash.
You were on a plane, you were watching an air crash investigation?
Yeah, the show, Air Crash Investigation, where they show airplane crashes and how they investigate it. You know, uh-huh.
That's another nice thing to show on a plane, yes, when you're flying. Yes, and?
The guy asked me to shut it. He was getting freaked out.
Uh-huh. I don't blame him. I wasn't so excited when this guy sent me about this small plane that made an emergency landing on a whatever. In any event, but I'm just saying to myself that how many people you speak to and you say, my life is going normal, my life is everything is going geschmack, and all of a sudden, boom, right? My life was turned over today. Whether it's employment, whether it's health, whether it's chassid, the Ebeshah should protect us. What's happening? I said, maybe Hashem just saved your life. Maybe if you knew your tafkid in this world, maybe if you knew the reason you were down here in this world, there had to be this major drastic turn in order to save you. Like, how do we know what has to be done the last second where we are? Like, imagine if the air traffic controller would have said to this pilot, turn, turn! He goes, no, why should I? Right? He's resisting it. He wouldn't have had too much time to answer the question to where we are. There's a great control tower in the sky. So the Degel Nach Nefrayim, he says like this. How's about helicopters? Could they turn quickly?
Yeah.
They could, okay. So
there's banks and then there's turns.
There's banks and turns. What's the difference in a bank and a turn?
A turn, just you turn your heading. And a
turn, you turn your heading. And a bank?
It means like if you're facing this way, you turn, you can turn right away this way. And a bank means you're actually moving in a direction.
Right. So a turn means if you turn this way, you can actually turn this way. And a bank means you're actually moving in the direction that you're turning. Right. It's a good thing I'm not a pilot. Okay. Now, one is just turning when the whole plane turns?
Basically, if you're flying and you bank, then you're...
You're flying and you bank, which means you're going sideways?
Yeah, you turn sideways and you move in that direction. Whereas a turn, if I'm going this way, I'm just going to turn a 90-degree angle.
Ah, so turn means you're staying horizontal and just turning.
Yeah.
Like you would turn a car. And banking means the whole plane turns this way.
Like sideways, yeah.
Sideways, which is a much more desperate turn. Right.
No.
So when a guy's banking with his Toyota Sienna, that's not good. Right.
Yeah.
Right. So that only, I think, emphasizes the lesson that some, on any given day in the course of our lives, we have to make turns. Make turns. Hashem's directing us. And sometimes you can't just make turns. You have to bank. That means you have to bank. So we just got a lesson. Bank means the whole plane has to go sideways. And so we say to Rabbi Hashem, why are you doing to us? Why is my low life turning? Why did my life turn around today? Hashem says, trust me. I know what I'm doing. Okay? If you didn't bank, you wouldn't be here. A lot of people, when they go into the bank to check their balance, their whole life turns sideways right away, wherever you are. So, tomorrow night is the yard site of Rav Chaskel Kuzmir. You can see better from there. Okay, Rav Chaskel Kuzmir. Rav Chaskel Kuzmir, there was a dayan in Yerushalayim. His name was Rav Binyamin Rabinovich. The chevre of the Badatz, Tyre Yid. And he said this story happened to his grandfather. His grandfather was an enikel of the Yiddikash. To make a long story short, in Kuzmir, there was a terrible magefa, there was a terrible epidemic. And Reb Chaskel sent for his for this grandfather, this Yid, who's now dying in Yerushalayim, member of the Badas, and said, he was a bacher then, and he sent to his great-grandfather, send me your son, I need him as a gabbai. Nobody wanted to let their kids out of the house during that time period, but if Reb Chaskel Kuzmir sent, so he sent him. So he said, stand here, thousands of people are coming, people are crying, people are desperate. There was an epidemic, people were dying right and left. And stand here and help me. So he stood there and helped the Rebbe. One of the things the Rebbe did, the Rebbe sat and there were two tables next to him. And after a while he noticed that the kvitlach that he put on the right table, most of the time those people lived. And the kvitlach that he put on the left table, most of the time those people died. Apparently he saw when there was a chance to be mispal, when not. Like it says, Rebbe Chanina ben Daisek, he was mispal, he knew Zechai, Zemes. And he's standing there, he's the gabbai. And in walks an almana who had just lost her husband, and she had already lost three children. This was her fourth child, her last child. And she was crying her head off. And the Rebbe takes the kvittel and puts it on the left table. And this gabbai sees it, and he's like, so he takes the kvittel, puts it on the right table. And then the Rebbe starts davening a little, and he's like bitten by a snake. He goes, what'd you do? And he tells him, you know, that he's the ones he puts on the left are the ones he sees. There's nothing to be davening for. It's l'achigzar din. And he's like, you know, the warriors were crossed. He was like exploding. And finally he said to him, if not that I asked you to come in, I took personally responsibility on your turn. You went to the Gal Shul Atzomis. What are you mixing into these business? You know what's happening now, Shemaim? You know what has to be done? He said, but at the end of the day, the kid lived. So I'm saying, but Lamai said, the Rebbe is the one who called him to do it. You understand? Because he knew this guy, he knew this Bacher, he's the one that would switch it. He couldn't switch it, whatever his deal is in Shemaim. He said, I need a mechutzav over here to switch it for me. Now, in our lives, the Rebbe Hashem sends us mechutzafim, the switch thing. Yeah. Why? Why is this guy not in my seat? Why are certain things happening that I would rather not happen? And I used to hear from one of my Rebbeim, whenever you hear these stories, the Rebbe Hashem is as big as a moifis, as Reb Chaskel Kuzmir, as a Baal Shem Tov. The things that happen in the Hashgacha Pratis of our lives, those bank turns, where the plane has to turn to the right. I never knew that before. Where the plane has to turn to the right, right? Now, what was the Chet Eitz Hadas? The Chet Eitz Hadas was an attempt to try to, I don't want this to be unknown in the world. I want everything to be in my control. And the tikkun to the Chet Eitz Hadas is I'm planting trees. I don't see where the fruits are going. I'm doing mine. And sometimes you plant trees and it comes zetzing down and I don't know. And life has to go on. You know, I had a very interesting, I remember years ago I had this plumber. He was a great plumber. Meaning to say that generally when he fixed the pipe, it stayed fixed. Just unlike the experience I had with other plumbers, right? Mechanics and plumbers. And every time, he was an old man, every time I called him, he would yell at me. Why are you calling me? Because I have a leak under my sink. I can't come, I'm so busy. Okay. He goes, when do you want me to come? And I would tell him, like, I'm paying you. Of course you're paying me. Why are you screaming at me? And I never have. And he would always come. He'd always scream at me. He'd always come. And always fix the sink. And fix the toilet. Then I realized, this guy is depressed. He wants to stay in bed. And his wife says, we don't have anything to eat. And every time a customer calls, she says, no. He's so upset that he has a customer. That he can make money. Because he has no excuse to be in bed. It's like, in our lives also, you know, we don't want to do it. The Rebbe Hashem puts it to us on the plate. We don't want to do it. What are you screaming? The Rebbe Hashem says, I'm putting you where you're supposed to be. Oh, he said, I had this guy that came to fix my roof. And he has a big ladder, goes all the way up to the top. And he's climbing the ladder, and he's holding this thing of tar. With one foot, he's climbing the ladder. The other hand, on the phone. I don't know how they do this. Maish, you ever go up ladders? Yeah. Anyway, he gets to the top of the roof. And they stand on these curved roofs. They're like, scoop the roof. And I said, aren't you scared to go up like that and down? He goes, yeah, really, they have a rope, but they don't always use it. It's a pain in the neck, you know. I would imagine if you fall off the ladder, Chas Shalom, it'll be a bigger pain in the neck. But anyway, I said, you're not scared. Thanks for the chizik. But Akopanim, always said, he said, you're not scared like to do this for Parnasa? He goes, I'm more scared of coming home without Parnasa. That depends what's going on in his house. I don't know what's going on there. I can only imagine that's more scary than the ladder. Okay? So, but in other words, he's happy-go-lucky. Whatever's going to happen is going to happen. This is my job. If we could only assume that whatever is going on in our lives, whatever is happening, whatever, you're coming into a Shabbos, whatever, your face is because this is where we stood by Har Sinai. We're exactly with the people. We're exactly interrelating with the people. The Nesiyonah is the difficulties that we have with people, it's because this is what our tafkid is. Don't run away from it. And every once in a while that your life takes a big jerk and you're banged to the side, that was the Baruch Hashem did that. If you ever go to driving schools, so Hilly does driving schools, doesn't he? Doesn't Hilly do driving lessons? No?
I did.
You did driving lessons? 14. You gave driving lessons?
No, I didn't.
When you were 14?
Yeah.
Really? Did they know you were 14 when you were giving those driving lessons? When did you start the helicopter lessons?
Huh?
When you were 15. Anyway.
What?
Never mind, pass. So I remember, go ahead. Why they don't malam them like that? Because malam them love to come and teach. Anyway, imagine, because the kids don't call the malam to say, please come. So he knows he can't wait for the customer. Anyway, what was I saying? Yeah. What was I saying? I got distracted by the helicopter. Got to come down off the helicopter. So it says by Har Sinai that Klal Yisrael was Roye Mesakoylois. Why do they have to see the voice? See the voice? What does that mean?
What?
What? How do we know we had coke on Har Sinai?
Yeah.
I must have missed that, Rashi. How do we know we had coke by Har Sinai? Roim is a kolot. Okay. Getting competition over here. Oh, I know what I was saying because I saw Hilly. Hilly, do you give driving lessons?
My father does.
Father gives driving lessons. Okay, there we go. So I remember when I was taking driving lessons, so I would like, you know, the guy thought I was going to scratch the car. In the last minute, he would go, you know, grab the steering wheel. I said, why do you wait for the last minute? He says, because I was hoping you're going to do it yourself. But the last moment, there's no choice. I said, do it next time. Don't wait for the last minute, please. Well, that's how you're learning. The only way you're going to learn. So I'm saying, the Rebbeinu Shem sometimes makes us bank the last minute. Things happen in our lives that kind of upset our lives, and there has to be this quick turn. So why is the Rebbeinu Shem waiting for the last minute? Because the whole purpose is that we straighten in ourselves. But the Rebbeinu Shem never lets us get to the point of no return. Okay, so what does it mean, Royim es HaKoyles, besides that the Maishi is Coca-Cola? What does it mean? Tell me! What does it mean, Royim es HaKoyles?
Seeing the voice.
Shmuel, Royim es HaKoyles. They saw the voices. Why do they have to see the voices? See what the Kotzker Rebbe said?
If you can hear it, you can be dead, so you have to feel.
Okay, I'm not sure exactly what we said, but we'll make another share on that one. But the Kotzker said, because he would have heard Loi Signaif, they wouldn't have seen it, they would have said, Loi would have loved. Loi from him, Signaif, it's the mitzvah to steal, right? Why light signal? So the Degel Machne Frame says, unbelievable. He says, they looked at what a Kadosh Baruch Hu's plan for the world is. And by Har Sinai they saw everything until Mashiach is going to come. And they saw the tsaris of Klal Yisrael. They saw the Churban Abayis. They saw the individual pain. Saw how many people for Shabbos aren't going to be home. How many people are worried. How many people are... They saw the pressure of what's going on. And there was a certain contradiction. Because they saw the entire story from beginning to end, the koilis were very sweet. On the individual words, this and this is going to happen, they were like, that's going to happen? The Crusades and the Shnas Tach V'tah, the Spanish Inquisition, and all the that's going to happen? The words they couldn't understand. But the overall koilis were sweet. They understood, there's a whole cheshbon over here, how things have to click into place. So they said, we don't understand the words, but we see the koilis. We see that the Rebbeinu Shem has us exactly where we're going to be. So Rav Moshe says, the reason that to be Royim as a Koilais is that when you teach, you got to teach in such a way that you're alive. You got to teach in such a way that you have to see the Father. Can't tell the kid, go learn, and then you put your head down. The kid can't say, you know, I can't wait till I get bigger so I can talk by davening. The kid got to see the Father, not talking by davening. He has to be Royim as a Koilais. You have to give something for the kids. So I want to tell you a different shot of Royim as a Koilis. So I spend a good part of the day recording. So you have these, you see the waves on the screen, right? It's a little bit like the EKG waves. So somebody gave me once a whole lesson. And he's telling me that if you want to look at a perfect story, it's supposed to start, you know, like this, and then in the middle it goes up and down, and then toward the end there's an anticlimax, and then it has to go like this. It has to be in the emotion of your voice. And either ends with a climax all the way on top, or it comes all the way down. And you can, he says that he can look at these waves and see the whole story if the person said the story properly. And he says, what's the siman of a good speech? Right, a geshmaka beginning, a geshmaka end, and the shortest distance in between the two. Let me try to explain this. In the Sefer Acha Sha'alti, he has a very interesting shaila there. The shaila is that a man got into a taxi in Yerushalayim, and he tells the driver, Petach Tikva, and he falls asleep. Customer falls asleep, wakes up a while later, and the driver says, which street in Petach Tikva? He goes, no, he said, I meant Rechov Petach Tikva. I meant the street in Yerushalayim, Petach Tikva. Why'd you drive me to Petach Tikva for? He goes, you said Petach Tikva. So it goes, that is a whole machloikas, whether he has to pay the fear in it. So he writes over there, Rav Zilberstein, they brought him the shaila. So he says, they asked Rav Chaim Kanievsky what he thinks. Rav Chaim Kanievsky said that what's happened to him, he was on the bus, and he was going from, I don't have my geography right, Moshe helped me, he was going from Petach Tikva, he was supposed to go to Bnei Brak, he didn't get off in Bnei Brak, and he kept going till Tel Aviv. He fell asleep, he woke up in Tel Aviv. So he asked the Chazaynish Shaila, he has to pay the extra money for the ride to Tel Aviv. So the Chazaynish told him, it's not the bus company's fault that you fell asleep. I think there's a certain tifkait. So he said to him like this.
According to that, every time, so if your intention was to go on the subway for three stops and you decided...
Subway doesn't charge based on how many stops.
In Europe,
in a place where they charge based on how far you're going.
Oh, in Israel, once you punch that thing.
That's how it is now. But it used to be apparently, you said where you were going.
In Europe, you scan when you come in and go out, and based on the distance they charge you.
Right. So he says, it's not your fault. It's not the bus company's fault. Okay? So on the one hand, he tells him, look, it's not the driver's fault that you fell asleep. So the driver, for his point, he tied it back. Normally, if I was going to Petach Tikva, you make up a price. If it's a long distance trip, you make up a price for the driver beforehand. If I just told him Petach Tikva, he should have understood Rechov Petach Tikva. And the driver, for his part, tied it, that you shouldn't have gone to sleep. That made it sound like you're preparing yourself for a very long thing. So at the end, he paskins that they should divide the money half and half. But he tells him, listen, here's the catch. He tells him, who's taking you back? He says, for the way back, you have to pay fully. Why? It's his fault that I'm here. He says, no. Once you're here, there's a simon you have to be here. You want to go back with him? You got to pay him for the full trip. Got to pay him for the full trip of who you are. So I thought of a very interesting, try to understand this analogy, okay? I'm going to try to be serious for a minute. Let's see if it works. He's telling me, if you look at these sound waves, and you're trying to see a story, and the sound waves are, that's not a good story. Good story is, he walked in, he turned around, felt a dark shadow behind him. Thought it was nothing. And then suddenly, right? That's a good story. But just, that's not a good story. That's screaming. Okay? So, if this like this, like this, like this, you're not telling the story correctly. Which is kind of fascinating. So he said, but suppose you're missing a part of the story. You're missing a part where you really should have yelled and screamed and then tripped and yelled and screamed again. And the guy says, I want you to do a separate file of yelling and screaming, and then we're going to plug it in. Right? And you're doing a file, and in this file, you're screaming and screaming 5-6 times. It's perfect, because he's taking that and putting it into the context of a long, of up and down. But if I didn't know this file is clicking into a different file, I would look at it and say, this is not a story, this is a guy just screaming. Now, if we understood what the role of Har Sinai is, that we're each a different generation, and we pick up the ball and we carry it to the next generation, that we're each in a window of opportunity, so we don't know why are things happening in my life that things are going totally out of control. It's not. Because, and furthermore, take this a step further, and the Baal Shem Tov explains this really. That sometimes we can be sent down to this world just to fix a little thing. And it's and the Oisei Mokem, Oisei Eis, Oisei Isha. That person, that place, that woman, the world has to turn. So I can be misak in one inyan. And therefore we look at our lives, it doesn't make sense. Why is my life so traumatic? Why is there no menuchas and nefesh in my life? Why is it constantly the climax, the last, you know, climax, the last minute of the movie, boom, 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 boom. But that's my whole life from beginning to end. Something is wrong. And the answer is maybe that's the part you have to fit in. If you would know who you were in old previous Gulgulim, this is the part that has to click in. Now, once you accept it, and once you understand it, guess what? There's a certain menuchas and nefesh. A man told me once a fascinating story. He was in the Hungarian labor camps. Munkata was called Munkaba, And they were officially, they were Jewish soldiers. None of the survival rate was like 1%. They were human landmines, whatever. And he would say that the Hungarian general slash Nazi would call him out. And this is what he would do to him. He would read a letter that he got from home. And it would say, your mother is very sick. They weren't sure what's going to happen. And the doctor said, yeah, he'd rip up the letter. Leave him in the suspense. He had no way of finding out what would happen. So he walked in and he said, I'm committing suicide. I can't deal with that level of torture. And a friend of his says, no, look at it this way. The Rabbanu Shalom didn't let the Gzar Din come out. It's still open for interpretation. He said, well, that Russia left me hanging in suspense. Good. So the story's not over. Then pick it up from where it is. And maybe that's kind of the union of Royim as a Kailis. They saw where the Kailis fit in. It doesn't make sense. Why does one person have a calm life? The other person has these waves that go up and down because they saw everything clicks in. In Klal Yisrael's life in totality, it's a normal story. In our life in totality, it's a normal story. But we don't know why we're here. We don't know what we have to fix. Right? And who heard the President's State of the Union address? So they did all the polls. Of course, the Republicans say it was amazing. You know, we felt so proud. And the Democrats say it was horrible, and so on. So again, did they hear the same speech? They didn't hear the same speech. Because essentially they were listening to themselves. They weren't listening to what the President was saying. But right, everyone heard what they want to see. That's why by Klal Yisrael, it wasn't words. Words are interpreted. It was much deeper. It was Royim es HaKoilos. They saw the complete picture. And they applied it to themselves. I'll never forget, I once saw like his little fender bender on the street. It wasn't terrible. But a guy was making a U-turn. He wasn't careful. Another car, bam, crash. And the guy goes screaming at each other. He goes, what? He goes, I'm making a U-turn. Walking away from me. He goes... And the guy that made the U-turn into the other car, this was his argument. He says, I'm driving all the way from Montreal. After 9 hours, you couldn't wait for me to turn all the way around? So first of all, the argument really doesn't hold much water, right? Obviously, the guy didn't have a chance to stop. Second of all, what difference does it make where you're driving from? You could be driving all the way from Montreal, and every turn is just as important in your life. So we try to figure it all out. And the Rebbeinu Shem says, do the right thing now. Let me put the puzzle. And that's why it says, Enoichi Hashem Elokecha, says Hashem said all the Aseres HaDibros in one breath. And Klal Yisrael just plotzed. And then we came back and they heard it piece by piece. What was the point, says the Maharanayim, of hearing it in one breath? Because Baruch Hu knew that Nakhmi Alti Slavel. How could I hear the entire world in one sentence? And that was in one breath, in one half a sentence. So the answer is, that's the purpose of this was, when they heard all the Aseres HaDibros, which means Kol HaTorah Kula, in one split second, all in one shot, and it was internally absorbed into our subconscious, even though we couldn't handle it, to the point that it was parcha nishmasa, that we mamash died. But it's in deep in our inner conscious, we know there's a whole story. We know there's a whole story for Klal Yisrael, and we know my neshama, when it's not limited to my guf, is going to see my whole story. And I may have been sent down to hit on certain points. And that's the b'chol yom yiyu be'einecha kechadasha. And how we interconnect and interrelate with each other is our greatest tikkun. The Balatanya explains this. Because if I come to this shir, you come to the shir. Because what's going to look like if nobody was here, right? And so if I come to the shir, so then we each interrelect. The Rebbeinu Shem gives me a kayach to talk, and you get a kayach to listen, which is mashpia kayach to talk. When you come home Friday night with a smile, and you say, let's do our best to get a good Shabbos table going, knowing your kids are going to be off, knowing they're not listening to you. So don't say a long Dvar Torah, say a short Dvar Torah, sing a nice mirror, get them into it, do your best. Something is connecting. When you say, I've had it, I don't want to deal with this, not fear, I deserve better. That's it, you're disconnecting. What do you mean you deserve better? Your kaychais come from dealing with the nesyanis. The Mashem says, I'm making this catch. Make believe you're in the forest. Then all of a sudden everyone gets along with each other because you know you have to get along with each other. So great story. This young man, whole Thursday he can't learn, he's busy with his child in the emergency room. He says, a whole Thursday night, I'm going to learn. He comes into the Beis Medrash, he is dead tired. He says, I need a coffee. If I have a coffee, I can learn. And he walks outside to a coffee machine and he reaches for his equivalent of a quarter, shekel, 5 shekel coin. Doesn't have a red cent to his name. There's nobody in the shul. So he says, without a coffee, I can't do it. Without a coffee, I can't do it. He starts walking out. But now it's 2-3 in the morning. And he says to himself, okay, so I'm telling Hashem what the terms are. Instead, he walks in and he says, until I drop. Amar Abaya, Amar Rava, and all of a sudden, out of the blue. Anybody want a hot coffee? What? Eliyahu Navi, my grandfather from Shemayim. It's Abaya, it's Rava. Who are you? Who I am? Relax. I came from a wedding. A bacher said, I stopped off in the shul. I bought myself a coffee. I realized I'm fleshig. And I saw somebody in the smash. I just came and asked, maybe you want a coffee. You're not a ghost to waste. But that is Abaya. That is Rava. That is Eliyahu Navi. Because that is Hashgacha Pratis. Now think about it. That bacher had to buy a coffee that he couldn't use so that he can give it to someone else. This guy had to have the mysterious nefesh of trying to learn even without the coffee. If everyone stands up to their nisyonos, then the Rabbi Shem could plug us into each other. And then what happens, the Baal HaTanya says this, is because everyone needs a hashlam of all tayag mitzvahs, by me saying, I have to learn, even though I don't have a coffee. And this guy getting the opportunity to give me the coffee. His mitzvahs are credited to me. My mitzvahs are credited to him. And there's a hashlam of tariq mitzvahs. And the Kadosh Baruch Hu has this all figured out. We just don't see it. You ever type, you know, Hebrew, English, you go back and forth. Ever type Hebrew and English, and then suddenly you're typing, you think you're typing Hebrew and you're typing in English, and you write this whole essay, and you look up and it's all a bunch of mumbo jumbo, right? They say there's a program that fixes it. But look at it this way. He says, to you it's mumbo jumbo, but I said, these are real words. We're not on the same. Someone comes along and says, hey, I have a program, swish, all of a sudden it makes sense. Trust me, your life makes sense. You may not be able to read it. And that's why he was royim es hakoilis, because the words themselves don't always make sense to us. But they were on a much higher level, says the Degel Machna Frayim. The words were ununderstandable. How could this be happening to us? But the koil of Hashem, the koil that is deeper than words, That sing-song was unbelievable. All right, we'll wrap things up, Rabbi Say. It's getting late. So you know the story of said this once. Reuven 1 and Reuven 2. Reuven 1 wakes up in the morning. His wife has breakfast in bed for him. He runs to daven. He comes back. She's so nice. Coffee, cappuccino. On the way out, his boss calls. You're working so hard. You worked late. Come in 3 hours late. I'll pay you overtime for the money you sleep this morning. Goes back into bed, gets up, his son's menal calls, your kid just did by a p'china mitzvah. Unbelievable! And mama, she's up to lunch, his wife prepares this big lunch, telephone call, you know the Chinese over, you once split the pot, $50,000 coming your way, right? You know? There's a knock on the door, there's a mashulach standing by the door, and he gives him a nice check, okay. Big schus. Then there's Reuven too. Reuven too wakes up in the morning, his wife says, Meshugana, get out of bed, you're going to lose your job! Gets up, trumples into the Negel Vasser. Before he's down, the phone rings, the boss says, if you're not here on time, you're out of here! And he's like, out of there, and the boss, and by the way, he says, more hours and less pay! And he's like, all of a sudden the Manal calls, your son broke the window again, one more time, you're it. And then finally comes home, gets a call, hi, you invested, you put in a check for a Chinese auction, split the pot, yeah? Your check bounced. We're warning you, you better come back with the payment, right? And you come home and there's a mashulach knocking on the door for tzedakah. Get him out of here. Instead you say, how are you? Both of them say, how are you? Can you compare the schar of Reuven 2 to Reuven 1? Can't. The world needed that tzedakah. Reuven 2 needed that schos. And everything that took place in the day was all preparing for that moment. I don't know. I got this email. I don't know why it was sent to me. It was an advertisement. It says, fast-paced office is looking for a secretary. Maybe someone's trying to hint that I'm not doing this year. I mean, I don't know. You have to know Microsoft Office, Word, and Excel. Okay. And then they also said like this. They said that you have to be very good at customer service. You have to have a friendly demeanor, organization skills, positive attitude, open and eager to learn new things. You're willing to do that, we're hiring you. And I said, that's the Rabbanish I'm talking. Customer service. Supply for the people that are around you. They're all your customers. The Mashem has it all. The Tariq Mitzvahs. Friendly demeanor. The Makabal B'Sever Panam Yafis. Organization skills. That's Tefillah B'Tzivur. That's coming to learn together. A positive attitude. The Mashem, I'm not lost. If my life gets zetzed, it's because you're saving my life. Open and eager to learn new things. Every day is a new experience. And guess what? The Mashem is willing to hire us. It's called Nasa V'Nishma.
You've just experienced another Torah class brought to you by TorahAnytime.com.